is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Big stuff coming up today. We got the professor, as we do every day at 4 o'clock. We'll continue with our Seahawks free agent countdown. We've identified the 10 most prominent Seahawks free agents, determining whether they stay or whether they go. And I think we've had one stay so far, right?
Al Woods.
Or no, I got outvoted yesterday. We've got two.
What do you want?
We had a Fetty yesterday, but yeah. We'd like him to stay, but if he
at
goes...
The right price.
Yeah, at the right price.
Yeah, you want him gone, right? Jim and I were
well,
staying.
Well, that was on the assumption that he was going to expect somewhere around $10 million a year.
Mine was based on the assumption that there is, in fact, no offensive tackle tree that John Schneider can go to and pick offensive tackles off of, and he wasn't that bad.
There's some available, though, in free agency, and then certainly some available in the draft, but... I thought if Fetty was good enough at the right price.
Yeah, I just go back on, and I don't know how Pro Football Focus, graded him, but do you remember times going, Fetty? You know, kind of like when Jerry Seinfeld, like when Seinfeld would say Newman.
Yeah,
yeah. There wasn't that much of that. I thought he was good.
Saying his name out of anger.
Well,
and frustration.
I think over the last two years, he's improved. We'll ask Ray Roberts at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, Ray will be with us at 5 o'clock, and he's championed a Fetty. He's maintained that he wasn't being coached properly. He was being asked to do things that weren't really his strengths. He felt like he should have been coached differently than the way Cable was approaching him. So we'll get Ray's take on all.
I'll
of
give
that.
You a little tease too on Ray.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you'll be interested to hear what he has to say about George Fant.
Okay. Now that's where it stops.
Wow.
That's where it stops.
Dave's becoming a radio veteran.
That's right.
He thinks he's really good. Oh, damn it. No, it'll be an interesting take to get whether Ray thinks, what he thinks about George.
There you go. That's a good tease. And you didn't give it away, I hope.
I know, but I'm just dying to.
I know you are. Look at you're twirling your thumbs over there. He's like,
do it.
Barely contain
myself.
I
just want to say it. He's a guy who opens his presents on Christmas.
DJ, turn Dave's mic off.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to another topic.
I promise not to.
Ray will be with us at 5 o'clock, and he will unveil his thoughts on George Fant and everything else going on with the Seahawks. Meanwhile, Sackstravaganza has been a part of this program for a while. What are you laughing at?
No, I just like that term. I do. Yeah. And we're on part four now?
Well, I have to consult Maura Dooley. Maura, what number are we on?
I think it's Sackstravaganza 4.
Why would it be 4?
Because you had 3 before it.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense to me. No,
because last time I said it was 2, and you said you thought it was actually 3. So okay. I'm assuming we're on 4.
Well, I'll tell you what. And these other ones we probably won't go into too much. But I did do San Francisco Sextravaganza study. And
so somebody who's just tuning in that didn't hear the first 3 parts.
Yeah. So I'll
give
I'll
a brief
review.
Overview what it is.
Let's leave the Seahawk defense for the penultimate Sextravaganza before we get to our offensive. Sextravaganza, but I went through and looked at Bob's request only because he asked me.
Yeah,
Kansas City 2018,
because they were tied for the lead, I believe, at the end of the season in sacks. But we all talked about them.
They were
having
like
a bad defense.
They were 30th or 31st, or maybe even last.
Yeah.
Overall,
I think they were. Yeah. So, and what they got wasn't that great. It wasn't nearly what the Seahawks got out of their sacks, because they ended up giving up 7 touchdowns. They had a missed field goal, 8 field goals. Jim, what the hell are you doing over there? That's really
He's
dumb.
Not listening to you.
Yeah. A defensive touchdown, 1 defensive touchdown. They got 7 fumble recoveries, and then they had 3 drives where they got sacks that ended in an interception. So it was pretty, but 20 punts only. So, there was some field goals scored. There were some TDs scored. That was the difference.
They
had 52 in the regular season. In the playoffs, they just had 3. But for the Seahawk defense, this was Sextravaganza 1. The Seahawks, I think the thing that was really...
That was my favorite, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Of all 4 here.
That's the one he paid attention to, Dave.
All right. I pay attention to all of them.
But you got 7 punts. You gave up 7 field goals. You got two missed field goals. This is for our defense. This is regular season numbers. Zero touchdowns. And that's the thing. When they got a sack, and, you know, I just said that Kansas City gave up seven touchdowns when they were sacked. But and then, you know, they had two end of game or, you know, over on down type of situations. And then they got a defensive touchdown and six fumble recoveries. And remember that number because and that's the same number that Kansas City got from their 52 sacks. So this is, you know, almost half as much. And they end up getting six fumble recoveries, one less interception than they did. And they gave up zero touchdowns, whereas that Kansas City defense gave up seven. So, and then the other one was, and I'll stop throwing numbers at you, but the other one was San Francisco this year. They had 48 sacks. But the thing is with San Francisco, what was significant and what stood out is that they were number one in sack yards. So they were fifth in sacks with 48, but the sack yardage is really where it's important. 367 yards, and they were number one in the NFL. But, yeah, for the Seahawks, and the only TD that they gave up after getting a sack on a drive was in Green Bay, and it was a zero-yard sack.
Okay.
So
why did they call that a sack when it's 0 yards?
I think
because they got a couple in Philadelphia.
You'd
too.
Have to lose half a yard, right? You can't.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that. They should. It should be, you know, 1 yard sack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you had to have lost yardage in order for it to qualify as a sack.
Right. But I mean, they're in pass situation. You know, it's offensive line. It's just a ruling, I guess. You know, and they're back to pass, and then usually it's. He starts scrambling. So that was the only touchdown they gave up. It was in the playoffs. So the Seahawks defense, even though, I mean, they were 31st in sacks. And this is why we're talking about, you know, that they got to get pass rushers. They only got 28, and they were 31st in sack yardage, 184, which stands to reason. But, yeah, that's just obviously something that, you know, was very necessary for this offseason. And we'll talk a little bit later about, I think there's three ways to get better, and obviously it's draft and it's free agency, but also it's your players in your draft getting good, you know, and not only that, sometimes you get some surprises. Would you say Puna Ford? I mean, he was a total surprise. He was a free agent
the first year he was, and then last year I think we
last
were...
year he was okay.
Was he so-so?
Yeah, he wasn't bad. I thought he was going to take a huge step.
I think we bought into what everybody around him was saying. At least I did. I won't speak for you guys. But, I mean, he had his peers around him talking about this guy could be one of the greats, and he's, you know, everybody on that team singing his praises, and he's a problem. And so he really got hyped up for what he was going to be in his second year. And to me, he fell short of that. He didn't – I'm not going to say he was terrible. He was also a guy that you kind of forgot about at times
right. Because
you just didn't hear his name.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I think, again, the expectations for him, I mean, if you compared him and Collier, I mean, Collier, the expectations are through the roof. He's a first-round draft choice. And again, I think he's one of those guys that can get better. But you know, I went through and did the Seahawk sack, and it really is a testament to Russell Wilson. So, and
you're talking about times that Russell got sacked by the opponent.
Times that Russell got sacked, and this is including the playoffs, 54 times. And, you know, the thing that you notice with him, he takes sacks, and it's not like he can control them, but when he does and when he extends plays, it's typically not in field goal position. There was one time where he got sacked, and it became, instead of a 46-yard attempt, if he'd just thrown it away, it became a 50-yard attempt.
Mm-hmm.
But that was in Philly.
And, still within range, though.
Yeah, but I looked at Myers, and he was about 50. He's 55% 40 or further. 55%,
right.
So not great. So, I mean, he could have missed it from 46 easily.
But that's the worst when you're watching a game, though, and a quarterback, when you're down at the 35 or the 30, and they take a sack back to the 40.
And there was really none of that. There was only that one, and I don't think he would have made it from 46. And the reason why is because, you know, again, he was about 50-50 in 40 yards or more, but also it was windy that day. And, you know, there was a chance that probably gets missed. But what you look at with the sacks that they took, so that's the thing you notice. Most sacks that he took were in his own territory or midfield. And the other thing is they got seven touchdowns. So in those 54, there was 34 punts, five field goals, one missed field goal that I just mentioned, seven touchdowns, four times it ended on game, ended at the end of the game or downs or half. There was one defensive touchdown scored. That was the one in San Francisco. Zero fumbles from Russell Wilson. He did not fumble. And again, Kansas City got six fumble recoveries. The Seahawks got six in their 28 sacks. That year with San Francisco this last year, they got three fumble recoveries. Russell, zero.
So they didn't count that one that Effetti took the ball
well,
away from
Well, I don't
him?
Count it for Russell.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's my point.
I like that description, that Effetti took the ball away from him.
No, he did. He did. Effetti came up and ripped the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands. And, you know, and I think he was trying to make a play to his credit, and it ended up badly. But Russell Wilson did not fumble. So
what? I'm curious, just in all of this, and you've done a ton of work on all of this, looking at different numbers and different teams. Is there anything that surprised you that you didn't know?
Yeah, that one. That, and then also the Seahawks not on defense, not giving up a touchdown.
On their 28 sacks.
Yeah. So, and every other team, you know, did. So, and even though they didn't get a lot, they made the most of the 28 sacks, I guess, how you would characterize that. And then how I would characterize the offense and the sacks that they gave up is that Russell Wilson did the best he could. He didn't take sacks. Like I said, they didn't get sacked out of field goal position. Everything I wrote down notes, you know, they were in own territory or midfield where it would have been like a 55 to 60 yarder.
Right. But so, maybe they killed drives, though.
Yeah, they had 34 punts.
Yeah.
So 54 sacks resulted in 34 punts. And I just think with Russell, you are going to get sacked, because he is a guy that's going to extend plays. And since he does control that part of it, he can throw the ball away. He can try to extend a play. Sometimes he's wrong. And I don't know how you guys feel, but when he tries to extend a play and he gets sacked, do you ever go, oh, that was so stupid, why did he do that?
Every once in a while I will complain when he will run out of bounds and it's a sack because he ran out behind the line of scrimmage.
Had those?
He's done that a couple of times.
But it's not much of a loss, though.
Still, I'm just like, why wouldn't you just throw the ball away?
Because he's always got that ball where he gets the extra yard by sticking his left foot.
Why not? But that's when he's going for the first down. He's behind the line of scrimmage. He's being chased to the sideline. I'm thinking, okay, you're out of the pocket. You're out of that tackle box there. Throw the ball away. It's not like every time, but just answer your question. Those are the times I'm like, Russell, throw the ball away. You took a 2-yard loss there, and you could have just flipped the ball. You were right there.
Yeah, I don't remember him making that mistake, but yeah, I'm sure you saw one or two there. But I think he's done a good job and he's handled it. I think, you know, when we heard from Jake Heaps talking about squandered, you know, that you need
Russell's
to get
being
more
squandered.
Yeah, more weapons around him. I don't think, and I'll have to ask Jake, or maybe Jake can call in and interrupt our show again. By the way, have you heard his glassy baby reads?
They're fantastic.
As a rookie. I mean, I swore the first time I did it because I didn't know we were on live radio.
Yeah.
And Jim had the bee venom cream.
Yeah, I'd like to see Jake handle bee venom cream.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying you did the glassy baby thing.
No.
Your first read. I got you.
Yeah,
got
Jake's, it's his first read that he's done. He's killing it.
And he didn't curse.
Yeah, exactly. Who knew? Yeah, I don't think Jake would say, I mean, obviously you want to protect your quarterback, but I think it's more about getting weapons around him than anything else. The one criticism I do have of Russell Wilson, though, and I don't know how many of these pre-snap penalties that they had this year, but they were number 30 as far as being bad in the NFL with 53 pre-snap penalties. So they had 126 penalties this year. 53 of them were pre-snap, and that could be
offsides.
How
many were delay a game, do you know?
That's what I'm you know, wondering, and you'd have to go through and look at every single one, but I mean, just going off your memory, like Bob talking about, you know, Russ running out behind the line of scrimmage, how many times do you remember delay of games? And I think maybe it's exaggerated a little bit because, you know, they got that delay a game at the end of the season. But did Jake text in, by the way?
Yeah, he said, don't test me, I'll do it. You guys sound great. Jake's got an open invitation anytime he wants to call in.
But I think, you know, look, Russ can get better at that, you know, and getting up to the line of scrimmage and, you know, listen, this will be talked about, definitely. But yeah, that's, you know, looking at the pre-snap penalties, I don't know what an appropriate amount would be. You're going to get delay of games, but it just seemed like there was a number of those, and if they weren't, then they were burning timeouts.
And how many times did they snap the ball when it was 0-1 and then just a fraction before?
I think sometimes
it seemed like they snapped it right on double zero.
Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah. That was always happening. But I think that's how they wanted to run the offense, especially this year with a bad defense.
Yeah,
I think they wanted to eat as much clock as they possibly could. I don't think that was. I think at times they were unorganized. There certainly were those moments where they called timeouts. And you're like, man, this is what you came. And sometimes out of timeouts, you'd see a situation like, how are you this discombobulated coming out of a timeout?
Do you think Pete Carroll would really say, or Brian Schottenheimer, yeah, that was part of our plan, was to let it go 0-2, 0-1, 0-0?
I think
0-0.
They probably tell him, run that thing down as far as you can get it.
Yeah, because I think
they wanted to keep the opposing offense off the field. They knew their defense was suspect at best. I think they were trying. That was part of it.
I didn't like the defense either, but snap it at five. I think people got tired of that.
And I think that's something that can get fixed. Definitely. I mean, it's not like.
I would think that would be an easy fix, right? Well, you got a giant clock there. Like, Russell, as soon as that thing hits five or whatever number you determine, have that ball in your hands.
It sounds easy. It does. But, you know, like, we try to hit certain timeouts of getting out of the show, and we can't.
Yeah, but we're
sometimes dealing
with Jim. He doesn't pay attention. He sees the clock coming up, and then he's got one more question.
No, but honestly, okay, so, you know, and I don't know if I'm supposed to divulge this, but that, you know, you want to get out at a certain time.
Yeah,
we've got
certain times we're supposed to break.
But there's always something that you know, I just one more. And I would compare that to Schottenheimer going, you know what? Let me see if I can get the perfect play here, and maybe give, you know, maybe Russell audibles, you know, and so instead, you know, you end up losing 5 yards. So why not just run whatever? Just run a play.
They're dealing with what you'd call in the radio business a hard out.
Yeah, that's right.
You've got a definitive clock there where we are supposed to break at this time, but we can go past. There's no
right.
Doing national radio, those commercials would fire.
Right.
You have to be out at this time because you've got all these affiliates on the same clock.
It's a great example.
So they have a hard out. They don't really have that slack.
It's very true. So, I mean, I think, again, that can be fixed. And by the way, the other I did a little penalty study here because there's a site on there that, you know, details every one of them. Do Seahawks fans feel like the Seahawks got jobbed on the road this year with penalties? Text it in 710-710 because
I'm sure they probably do.
They were number 32 in away game penalties. They had 87 away game penalties. 87. And then the home penalties, they were number 3 with just 39. But these away penalties, 87 of them, the next closest was 74. So, yeah, and I think it was Tampa
11
Bay.
11 a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's amazing on the road versus home. And, you know, there's human nature actually involved with the officials. Hmm. I honestly believe you're much more likely to call something that's going to get a cheer from the crowd.
Yeah. I don't recall feeling like the road was a bad place penalty-wise. There have been games where you go, man, there are a lot of penalties in this particular game. But I mean, they're
7-1, so obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say they were decidedly better on the road, so it didn't have a negative impact on them. Maybe they would have been 8-0 without the penalty. I don't know. But
yeah.
I don't recall feeling that way. There are certainly games you come away from going, man, the officials were really present in that game. There were a lot of flags.
All right. But just to summarize, I think the Seahawks defensively got the most out of their pathetically low number of sacks in that they did not give up a touchdown during the regular season. And, you know, and they got 6 fumble recoveries, which Russell gave up 0. Now, I know technically they had a fumble, but that was a Fetty ripping the ball out of Russell's hands. So, you know, they did a good job. I think Russ does a really good job of managing that part of it. And I guess, you know, going just if you just went off of this and then, you know, you had the discussion about getting a number 3 and a number 4 receiver,
right,
that would be way more important to me. Then, and that's kind of why I'm like, I thought Ifedi played good. You know, it wasn't great, but I thought he was good, and I think he can get better. But we'll talk to Ray at 5 o'clock and see what he thinks. But to me, it came off that Russell handles this kind of stuff. And one of them, remember, I did a football 101 on his passing percentage. He had 83% completion in that Pittsburgh game, and he had like 35 attempts. And
he was getting buried early in that game, too.
Yeah, I was getting to that. Brent Stecker and I did this whole thing that, you know, he's one of like 3 guys in NFL history to have that many attempts and have that high of a completion percentage with 3 touchdowns and no interceptions in the history of the game. He started off that game. He got sacked 3 times in the first quarter. 3 times. So, as you said, Jim, I mean, and it was like 20 yards of sack yardage. The other thing that happened is there was a long pass in that game that was like 45 yards. It got taken away because of a penalty. So, I mean, it just kind of proves that, you know, this was Russell really controlling a bad situation and making the best out of it.
Before we go to take two, somebody clearly watches the stream. They said, 360 said, pretty rich for Jim to be complaining about Russell not using the clock better. How many times does a producer have their hands in the air as Jim asks just one more question? Love you guys.
Oh, that was probably Jake. Jake texting
him. Who's that? Boy, taking a shot there.
They were. Okay. Somebody that watches the stream when you put your hand up. One more.
Yeah, I have it coming.
All right.
Let's take 360 two. Says a fatty's footwork's the biggest problem. Yeah, we said that yesterday. But yeah, let's
take two.
Take two. All right, it has just been made official within the last few minutes. Taiwan Walker and the Seattle Mariners are in agreement on a one-year, $2 million contract. ESPN's Jeff Passan reports that Walker can make up to $3 million total based on incentives.
Yeah, well, Taiwan Walker is coming back.
One of the big three.
One of the big three with Paxton and Holtzman, and so we'll see. But coming off Tommy John, he only pitched one inning last year, had shoulder issues, and only three starts in 2018. So reclamation project, and you throw him into that rotation maybe as a number five starter or at least a candidate. And
is that a great payday to be a guy who they're taking a flyer on? He's getting, what, $2 million?
Yeah.
With a chance to make more. And it may not work out. $2 million.
Yeah, but what if it does work out?
That'd be great. And I'm rooting for him. He was a great kid. And initially, that trade was very one-sided in favor of the Mariners. Because the players you got in exchange versus what they got, it wasn't.
Yeah, but
even
when
close.
The trade was made, weren't you worried about Walker being a star for the Diamondbacks?
I thought there certainly was potential, but they sent Ketel Marte down to the minors. He played at the big league level for a little bit, and he got sent down. And you
now
had
he's a star.
Marte is hammering the ball too.
Well, we know the ball was a little funky last
year. Bigger.
Too.
He got bigger, Bob.
He must have, because all of a sudden he had pop in his bat.
Yeah. Isn't this a year, though, when you throw a guy like Taiwan Walker out there in the rotation? And Kendall Graveman, the same thing, coming off Tommy John. He didn't pitch last year. So you got two guys in there, possibly, who didn't pitch at all last year. But if they don't do well, you're not going anywhere this year anyway.
No, I'm rooting for him.
Right. Josh Gordon replied to a fan on Instagram saying that he will be back. He's still suspended indefinitely as of right now. Do you think we see him here or on any team next year?
I don't know what his punishment's going to be. They haven't handed it out yet. So this
still
is
indefinite.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're talking about a multiple-time offender. Whether you think what he's done is serious, not serious, that's sort of irrelevant. He's been in this spot multiple times, this time for recreational and PEDs. So I don't know, is that double the penalty? I don't know how Roger Goodell and the league is going to look at this. I've got no idea what kind of suspension he might be facing.
From what I understand, it wasn't the PEDs that was the problem. He has, like, anxiety and things like that. And so, you know, and I don't know what it was that he was busted for. But
well, we'll never know. They're not allowed to say it.
Yeah, they're not allowed to say it. But, man, he's such a great player. I hope he's able to turn it around. Certainly wasn't a problem to anybody except himself.
No, and that's what we've talked about. As much as we've heard his name for all the wrong reasons over the years, it's never been about being a bad teammate, hard to get along with, disruptive in the locker room. He's more of a detriment to himself with his issues. So hopefully we do see him. Hopefully it gets cleared up, but really no idea what he might be facing. Meanwhile, the Seahawks got contributions that we might not have expected last season, like Rashad Penny and Rasheem Green. So who might we expect to see that kind of season from coming up this year? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
One other programming note I forgot to mention. We'll be catching up with Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn. We'll be on the program as well. So we got the professor coming up at 4 o'clock. We got Justin Dunn coming up at 4:30. Really good conversation with him. He sounds, and we'll say it during the interview, but he does not sound like a guy who's had, what do you have, four appearances last year? He's 24 years old. We've talked to 24-year-olds, whether it's football or baseball, and you can tell, yeah, they're young. They'll get it. You can hear the youth in them. You can hear the inexperience. You don't hear that with him. He sounds like I could tell you, yeah, here's a guy who's 33 years old. He's been in the league a long time. You'd go, yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, he's got the mental makeup. I mean, Justin Dunn, if he can just get it together. I think he was just a little nervous last year when he appeared for the Mariners, and I think he'll get it straightened out this year.
Well, you want to talk about just a mature kid.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is because of his, you know, the way he was raised, the way his parents dropped him off at the curb, like, go fend for yourself.
It's pretty funny to hear. We'll let you hear his response to that, because his comment on that was pretty funny. But that's coming up at 4:30 today, so stay tuned for that. Professor coming up at 4. Before we get into who might step up this year, I want to counter one thing. The 360 texted in. The biggest problem for the Seahawks is they refuse to pay for good O-line play. It's frustrating for a team that wants to run the ball.
Dwayne Brown.
Now, I'm not saying they've spent their money wisely, but spending money has not been their problem. They've just spent it in the wrong areas. Now, Dwayne Brown is not the wrong area. That was a great move. They spent a lot of money on Luke Jokel. They spend money on Jamarcus Webb, who was their highest paid offensive lineman when he was here.
Jamarcus Webb, that's right.
He was their highest paid O lineman.
That's true, he was.
Yeah. And
he was terrible. The number, do you remember?
It's like, I think it was around four.
4 or 5 million.
Something like that, yeah.
And if he started, it was just because of injuries, wasn't it? That they threw him in there a couple games?
He was just bad. So they've spent money. It just hasn't worked out. You can go back to Robert Gallery. You could look at DJ Fluker. You can look at Bradley Sowell. I mean, they've invested and sometimes way too much. I think Jokel got close to $8 million, something like that, and you had Cable calling him the best guard in the NFL from the year before. So them spending money on the line has not been a problem. It's just the choices they've made haven't been great.
I mean, you're not going to be perfect at everything, but they've been good enough to build double-digit win teams and teams that go to the playoffs, what, 8 out of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, yeah, that's been a little bit of a struggle for them. We were just talking about James Carpenter.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've hit really well in other areas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly they have. They've got more success than failure. It just seems like their higher draft picks, if you want to talk about draft picks, first round, second round have been problematic with Malik McDowell and Kristen Michael, and we can go through the list. But you talked about ways to get better for this team. Obviously, you can do it through free agency. You can go out and spend a bunch of money on a proven talent. You can draft well, which they have and haven't. I mean, like any other team, there are hits and misses. Or guys you have drafted step up and mature, and maybe some that you don't expect. And last year you could point to somebody like Rasheem Green, who, was he a Pro Bowler? No. He led your team in sacks. He had 4 sacks. He was certainly more of a presence than he'd been at any other point during his time here. So he's a guy that stepped up. Rashad Penny started to step up. Then the injury came into play. Looking at the roster now, who are the likely candidates to step up? If you're going to say, all right, here are the guys that we got a glimpse, I expect them to take that very next step and be a presence of some sort.
Yeah, well, and you're talking about from the draft.
Not the draft to come, but
yeah, exactly. And the thing is, so look back in this last 2019 season, and who are the guys that they drafted that stepped up? Rashad Penny. That ended up, I mean, he was on his way. Would we agree? I mean, whether or not he's a first round,
he finally looked the part of being a first rounder.
I thought so too. Rasheem Green was a third rounder, but mm-hmm. he definitely, and I've compared him to Jeff Bryant, who a lot of old Seahawk fans will remember. I think he's third all time in sacks in Seahawk history. He's going to get, you know, 7-8 a game. And then Will Dissly, who was injured, but I mean, that's a guy that stepped up. And Shaquem Griffin, he got better.
Mm-hmm.
He got better, and by the end of the year, he was putting pressure on the quarterback. And I don't care what anybody says, Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers had 3 interceptions. He struggled down the stretch a little bit, and it was mostly about penalties. But all of those guys last year, when we were talking about, you know, getting free agents in here, you know, and drafting, you were thinking, you know, we weren't really talking about these guys that much. And so I would say the same thing about the 2019 draft. And I'll go out on a limb and say I'm expecting something from L.J. Collier. I feel like that they didn't miss that bad. Your buddy and my buddy.
Brian Baldinger.
Baldinger, yeah. Really like him.
That's a really thin limb out there, Dave.
Yeah, you're on there. I'm not with you on that one.
Well, we'll see.
It's not a sturdy limb at all.
I'll tell you.
I give you credit for standing on it,
though. Here's why I'm saying it. And this is, you know, personal experiences can be deceiving, right? Just because it happened to me. But I'll just I think the Seahawker Club or something, you know, had me as most improved player from 87 to 88 because I started every game and, you know, I wasn't Pro Bowl material, but I played well. And I feel like it was just a comfort level of coming back from, and I think there's lots of pressure for being a first round draft choice. I was a second rounder, so it was a little bit less, but I feel like LJ Collier is going to come back and be a major contributor.
Were you as anonymous in your first year as he was? He had three tackles, Dave.
I ran down on a few kickoffs.
Three tackles.
I think
you had a better first year.
No,
I'm just gonna say
I played
right
in three snaps, Bob.
You only had three snaps all year?
Yep, I was hurt. I got traded that year. I was running down on kickoffs, punts, punt returns.
Do you think if sports talk radio existed then that they would have been trashing on Dave Wyman? And, man, why'd they take Wyman in the second round?
Yeah, probably. He's always hurt. They tried to trade him away and couldn't get anything for him. So, yeah. So I always stand by those guys. I mean, you looked at all the draft choices around him, and they all had a lot of success. But I expect something from LJ Collier next year. I've not written him off.
I'm going to give you a break on that one because Dave was right about Rashim Green. And I remember thinking, Rashim Green, I wonder what Dave sees in him. And so, yeah, LJ Collier, we'll see. I keep coming back to the training camp injury that he had with the high ankle sprain and that maybe with a full training camp.
We'll see the same progress next year.
Rashad Penny, we weren't talking very highly of him during his rookie season.
I don't think that's out of line to be disappointed with a first-round pick. I know it's the bottom of the first round, and Clayton can go, well, that's really like a second round. It's still a first-round pick. It's your first overall pick for your team, so I don't care what number it is. There's an expectation that goes with that. I don't think it's unfair to say, you know what? I expect more than three tackles. Unless it's a severe injury and they've been out the majority of the season, that's different. But if we're talking about a guy who, for the most part, is healthy, three tackles, I don't think it's unfair to say, yeah, disappointed, not a good year. Really feels like a bust at this point. And I'm with you, Dave. I'm not writing him off. I certainly think he could come back and have a presence next year. But there's no part of me that feels like this year is I'm not ready to qualify it with anything other than, you failed, man. You didn't step up.
He had opportunities, too.
150-plus snaps to be out there.
Well, and I guess the question would be then, and this is going on faith. It's going on faith of Pete Carroll that, you know, that he's going to be able to develop these guys, not just Pete, but, you know, the coaching staff. So, I mean, do you think if these guys step up the way that draft did, 2018 draft did, do you think it's going to be a success? Because the names, Marquise Blair, to me, that's
he was my guy. I would say him and Amadi. Those are the two that I would expect to take that next step.
Yeah, and it really, was there a Metcalf in this draft choice from 2018? Probably not. I mean, he was rookie of the year, and you know Disley, I suppose, could have been in his rookie year, but he got hurt. So, but you have him, you have Cody Barton, who I there's lots of things that he does that I really like, and then at the end we saw Phil Haynes, Ugo Amadi, Travis Homer and John Ursua.
Like to see Ursua step up.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Pete, you know, maybe he talked about wishing they'd have used Amadi earlier than they did. I hope he kind of feels that way about Ursua too. I hope there's an emphasis on really trying to see can this guy be our slot guy? Can he step into that role? Let's give him the opportunity.
You know, it'll be good news if we see in the offseason Russell tweeting somewhere that he's working out and he's throwing the ball to John Ursua, because that's what happened with Metcalf last year.
Yeah. Meanwhile, as we said, Taiwan Walker is back with the Mariners. So what can we realistically expect from the former first-round pick? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Professor John Clayton will be joining us on the program. We'll talk some football with him. Meanwhile, as we said earlier in the program, Taiwan Walker, in case you missed the news, is back with the Mariners. Former first-round pick out of high school back in 2010. He's dealt with some injury issues. We saw the trade, obviously, to Arizona for
Ketel Marte.
And I'm blanking on the shortstop.
Oh, Segura.
Segura. There you go.
Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger.
Which, again, initially, that looked like an awesome trade.
You'd forgotten about the hitting machine?
I did.
And who should have been the MVP of the All-Star game?
Yeah, he's a guy who led the National League in hits the year before, came here, and kind of picked up. Everybody worries about the transition from National League to American League or vice versa, and there's an adjustment period. He came over here and started hitting right away, and Thought he was a great fit until we found out later there was disruption in the clubhouse. But
there's a reason why he's played for several teams.
Yes. Yeah, remember? And then they gave him a contract.
Yeah, they signed him to the extension, you're right. And right. It looked like, man, Jerry won this one because Mitch Haniger is a star in the making. Segura's picking up right where he left off. Ketel Marte got sent down to the minors. And Taiwan Walker has been okay. And then, boom, the injury comes.
I think Segura might have been fine as long as Cano was there because they were good friends.
Yeah, well, remember he kind of took him under his
too. Cruz was a big Segura guy.
He took him under his wing because what happened was Segura lost a small child at 7 months. And he really went in the tank, and he told us how Robinson Cano just, I don't know if they had a connection, the countryman maybe.
Yeah,
I'm not
so.
Don't remember what the connection was there, but he took him under his wing and really helped him out. And it was really cool to hear that story. But then it was just so surprising that Segura ended up being a guy that was kind of disruptive in the clubhouse because, and we even heard a story. I remember the leadoff thing. Where he was just not doing the proper leadoff from the base and
secondary lead.
Thank you. And then I guess Cano was like, "Gene, what are you doing, man?" You know, he kind of yelled it out in like a meeting or something like that. So, yeah, it was just weird that I felt like after he went through all that he was going to be okay, and then he turned out to, I guess, to be kind of a turd in the clubhouse.
Yeah, him and D. Gordon getting into it in there and. You get shipped off. So here you are. Now Taiwan Walker, who was the centerpiece of that deal, is now back with the Mariners. And I was telling you guys during the break, when you really think about it, what a great life it is to be a big league pro with potential, especially a pitcher. Pitching is at a premium in this league, and you see it right here. A guy who you said, Jim, threw one inning last year.
One inning. And 13 innings the year before.
So he's got 14 innings in 2 years, the past two seasons. So in exchange for that, he's going to get $2 million guaranteed dollars with a chance to make more. But potentially he goes out there spring training. This is not what I'm hoping for by any stretch, but the potential exists that, you know what, it's just not there. You can't get back to where he was or he doesn't have the stuff. $2 million. $2 million, Jim.
Yeah, but from the
in baseball dollars, it's nothing.
Yeah, but, so if you're the Mariners, you just kind of take a flyer and roll in the dice, and who knows. And Taiwan Walker, only 27 years old, and you can go back. And it's the same thing with Kendall Graveman. I know he doesn't have the talent that Taiwan Walker used to have, but still, Graveman now, he's too.
You're excited about him. You've brought him up multiple times.
No, I'm not really excited about him. I just I bring people up sometimes that I'm not really excited about, Bob. It does happen on occasion. Now, how can you get excited about Kendall Graveman? But he is part of the rotation. And what I was going to bring up about him that is positive is that he's 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery himself. Mm-hmm. Taiwan Walker, 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery. Marco Gonzalez, when he was 2 years removed from Tommy John, he pitched 166 innings for the Mariners. And he had a 4 ERA. And then last year, another year removed from it, we saw him with 34 starts, throwing 203 innings, and he looked good last year. So there's at least precedent where you look at it and you go, the year after Tommy John, not so much. But since Taiwan Walker is 2 years removed, maybe they'll get something out of him. And I just, if like you're saying, if it doesn't work out, you're out $2 million, so what, in a season where you're not going to win anything anyway?
It'll be interesting to see who gets that fifth spot, and we'll talk to Justin Dunn about that too, definitely fighting for that. But maybe you get something out of Taiwan Walker. I thought it was kind of an interesting move, but, you know, like you said, Bob, $2 million, really not that much in baseball dollars.
Not in baseball dollars. It's
but really, all things being equal, wouldn't you rather see Justin Dunn as the fifth pitcher and not Taiwan
he's your
Walker?
Future. He's a young guy who's 24 years old who is part of that core that we're all being told, this is who you need to watch. This is really who the team is about moving forward, him and Sheffield and Evan White and Kelnick whenever he gets here, Julio Rodriguez, all those names. Those are the ones that are to be the future, to be the ones that maybe finally get you to the postseason. So, yes, to answer your question, Dunn would be the preference in that. I mean, listen, Walker's not old. It's just the injuries have been very problematic and serious. So I don't know what's a realistic expectation, that he becomes the fifth starter? Is that realistic, that he makes it into the rotation?
Yeah, well, I think he's one of the candidates.
Well, certainly he is. I mean, $2 million, as much as it's not much in baseball dollars, it still represents a commitment and some level of expectation.
Yeah, I like it. I'm glad they got him. And let's see what you have. And like you said, it might just be something where you're just, you know, putting him on the side of the street and you don't want him anymore. But Taiwan Walker, with all the talent that he had at one point in his career – When they made the trade, I wasn't so sure about it. I thought, man, Taiwan Walker, he could be a star for the Diamondbacks. You might regret this one. And now he's coming back, and you can see what he's going to be like in this second part of his career. And maybe it won't work out. I'm with you, though. I'd rather see Justin Dunn in the rotation than Taiwan Walker.
Yeah, I was going to say, is anybody like fired up going into this season to see Kyle Seager have this amazing year? Or even a guy like Taiwan Walker? I mean,
as a Mariner fan, I certainly want to see it. But
nothing against certainly Kyle Seager, but it's just like that's not what this team is about. It's about the Shed Longs, you know. It's about the guys like Kyle Lewis. So,
well, you want to see Seager have a good season so you can trade him.
Good point.
Don't you? I mean, that's basically...
Yeah, him, D. Gordon. I guess
I don't know who's going to take on his contract, and then you got that poison pill on the contract where he gets another year added on. But, yeah, you're in a tough spot with Seager.
Yeah. I mean, Dunn pitched well last year in the brief. He had four appearances, had an ERA of 2.70.
He walked nine guys.
For a young guy, that's his first taste. It's not horrible. That's not bad. He showed promise. He's got stuff. That's who I'd like to see assume that role. He's not a kid. He's not a 19. He's not Felix coming up, 19 years old, teenager. He's 24. So this feels like a good time. And again, we'll have that conversation with Justin Dunn coming up at 4:30 today. Remarkably mature. I mean, he just, in terms of his headspace, the way he thinks about the game, he feels like he's there.
You think he's more mature than I am at the age of
63? Yes.
You sure about that?
Decidedly.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
All right. Coming up, Myles Garrett has been reinstated by the NFL. Could we see Josh Gordon return as well? Talk to the professor about all of that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.